Now this may seem a strange and unfamiliar chapter from which to speak at a family service like this. But the subject matter of this chapter is very important. It is very important because it tackles one of the most important questions we can ever address as human beings living here upon earth. Because this chapter deals with the all-important questions of wisdom and understanding. Wisdom and understanding. Now we live, of course, as all of us know, in a very high-tech environment. There is news 24/7. We can access the internet from our mobile phone. We can see things happening in real time on the other side of the world. We can have seemingly endless access to endless amounts of information at the click of a mouse before our computer screens. The neoliberal worldview in politics and economics still promises new horizons of wealth and satisfaction. But the question that this chapter addresses is this: what about wisdom? And what about understanding? This tells us, this chapter, as we shall see, that wisdom and understanding cannot be discovered by us, and that we cannot acquire it. We cannot know the secrets of life. Twice in this chapter, two pairs of questions are asked in verses 12 and 20. The questions are asked: but where shall wisdom be found? And where is the place of understanding? There is only one who has wisdom and understanding in full measure, in the fullest sense of that term, and that is God. And that is God. And if we would have any contact with wisdom, and if we would have any appreciation of understanding, it is only as we come into contact with God. It is only as God is real to us in our lives. Verse 28 tells us, the fear of the Lord, that is wisdom. To depart from evil, that is understanding. Now, without going into great detail about this chapter stands as a unit in the book of Job. Now, the book of Job, as you probably all know, the book of Job is full of arguments and debates about suffering, about why Job is suffering. And there are many questions raised in the book of Job to which there are no ready answers. There are no ready answers. The mystery of suffering, for many, remains a mystery as long as we live in this life. Recently, there was a debate in Edinburgh, in Salisbury and Mayfield Church, between a man called Julian Baggino, who is a professor of philosophy at the University of Exeter. He is a leading humanist, and he is an atheist. And the other person involved in that debate was the principal of New College, Professor David Ferguson. And Baggino was saying to Professor Ferguson that the great challenge to Christianity does not come from science. It rather comes from the whole question of evil in the world. That is the great question that we face as Christians. Not so much the threat that comes from science, but rather the threat that comes from the mystery of evil in the world. And of course, the book of Job tackles and deals with this great question of suffering. And the mystery of suffering remains a mystery for many as long as we live in this life. And there is no answer to some of the suffering that takes place in this world, that suffering that we perhaps ourselves have passed through at one time or another. Now this chapter, of course, is a poem. It is, and this is obvious as you read this chapter in more modern translations, it is only verse number 28 that is a prose postscript to this chapter. This is a great poem to wisdom. And in verse number 28, God now speaks for the first time since the early chapters of the book of Job. And he speaks to humanity as a whole here in verse number 28. Look at verse 28, it begins, "Unto man, or unto man he said." Now this poem is written in a calm and a measured tone. It has to do with wisdom, and it has to do with man's inability to find wisdom. There is wisdom. There is wisdom behind creation. There is wisdom behind the cosmos. But as we shall see from this chapter, we cannot find it. We cannot find it. Now let us not degrade the achievements of the human race. We think of the ancient world. We think of the building of the pyramids. We think of the Romans, how they constructed these great roads and these great viaducts. We think of the scientific achievements of the modern world in which we live. And we know so much. And science has done so much for us. In science and technology, in medical research, and so on. But what about wisdom? What about wisdom? What about understanding? Now, as we come to look at this chapter, this is a chapter that divides up into three parts, into three sections. First of all, from verse 1 through to verse number 11 here, we are told that precious ores and precious stones have a place notice. They have a place where they may be found, down there in the depths of the earth. But wisdom has no place where it may be found in all the land of the living. The second section of this chapter is from verse 12 to verse number 22. And we see that wisdom is priceless. But at the same time, it is unobtainable. We cannot buy wisdom. No matter how wealthy we might be, we cannot go to the auction markets of this world and buy wisdom and understanding. And thirdly and finally, from verse 23 through to verse number 28, God alone knows the way to it, for he is the creator of the world. And to know him and to fear him is to come into contact with wisdom. It is to come into contact with the God of wisdom. And so let us look at the first section of this chapter, from verse number 1 through to verse number 11. And in this first section, we are told that there is a place where precious ores and precious stones may be found. What do we read in verse 1? Surely there is a mine. Surely there is a mine for silver and a place for gold. And Job here wants us to think. He wants us to think about mining, and he wants us to think about a mine. And there are two motives that intertwine here. On the one hand, we have these objects of great value, precious stones, there in the earth. On the other hand, the search for these precious stones is difficult and it is costly. This first section deals with mining. There is a mine, he says, and he wants us to think about this mine. Now, of course, there are different mines in the world. There are mines for silver and gold and copper. Mining for coal, of course, especially here in Scotland. And those that are involved in mining are engaged in dangerous work. I'm sure we all witnessed on the television these miners that were in South America who were trapped in that mine, and how we saw how dramatically they were rescued in that specially designed capsule that brought them to the surface and to safety. And how many have lost their lives, even here in Scotland, in mining accidents. And when men dig into the earth, they are digging into a mysterious place with hidden perplexities and hidden dangers. But in the earth, says Job here, there are treasures. There are treasures that are placed there. And the search for these treasures, it is dangerous and it is lonely work. Look at verse 5. In verse number 5, Job contrasts the farmer on the surface of the ground, farming his farm, and he thinks of those who are deep in the bowels of the earth, who are mining for these precious stones. But the miner working in the bowels of the earth, his life is exposed to danger. Even today, how often are there mining accidents? Not so much in this country now, but in other parts of the world. Now, when we look at verse 7 and verse 8, we see that this is a search. This is a quest that belongs only to humankind. It is only man that is engaged in this kind of search. Neither the vulture, nor the falcon, nor the eagle's eye, nor the lion in all his strength is engaged in this search for precious metals. And why is this search engaged in with all its danger, digging into the depths of the earth? It is because what can be found there. It is what can be found there. It is the precious stones, the precious metals that can be found there through digging into the earth. And it is because of what can be found there. It is the object of the search that is important. These precious metals. Now we ask ourselves this question. Why is it that Job engaged in bringing to our attention this whole question of mining down into the earth? Why is the author of this poem to wisdom highlighting this human obsession with all its danger, with all its loneliness? Well, mining in the natural realm is parallel with a far greater and deeper search, and it is the search for wisdom. It is the search for understanding. And he's making this parallel. Why do men expose themselves to this danger and dig into the bowels of the earth? They are searching for precious metals. Now, says Job, there is another search. It is the search for wisdom. For wisdom. It has to do with the meaning of the universe. It has to do with the very meaning of life itself. In Proverbs chapter 3 and verse number 19, we read these words. The Lord by wisdom founded the earth. By understanding he established the heavens. Why is the world such as it is? Why are we living here on this planet? Why is life able to subsist here, to exist here on this small planet? Why is it not too cold? Why is it not too hot to sustain life? Why is everything the way that it is? Why is it that it all works? Why is it that we work as individual human beings? Why are we able to live here? What is the explanation for all of this? Is there an explanation? Why does it all fit together? When we are very young, and growing up, when we first go to school, we live in this world. And we take it for granted, unless we have been brainwashed otherwise, that this world had a designer. That we live in this world and it all functions. Why is that? Why is that? Is it down to mere chance? Or is behind this world someone who has designed it and brought it into existence that we ourselves might be able to live in it? Now, when we come to verse number 12, we enter now into the second section of this chapter. This beautifully constructed poem about wisdom and understanding. And from verse 12 through to verse number 22, we see how priceless wisdom is. And yet we see also that it is unobtainable. In verse 12, the question is asked again, the central question of the chapter, but where shall wisdom be found? And again, where is the place of understanding? Where is the place of full understanding? These two questions cannot be answered by us. With all our ingenuity, with all our resources, we cannot satisfactorily answer this question, these questions about wisdom and understanding. Look at verse 13. Verse 13 says, says to us, man, it says, does not know the way to it. It is not to be found in the land of the living. Look at verse 14. And here in verse 14, the natural and the physical world is portrayed as speaking. A speaking notice. And how beautiful are these words. The deep says, notice, it is not in me. Wisdom cannot be found here. Therefore, we cannot mine in the earth to find wisdom. Next, he speaks about the sea. We think of the sea. There are parts of the sea that have never been really fully explored by mankind. So difficult to have access to it. And what does the sea say? The sea says, it is not in me. So we can explore the seas, but we will not find wisdom there. And we come up against this barrier. We come up against this obstacle, an obstacle that cannot be surmounted. Where is wisdom to be had? Wisdom cannot be found. Man, with all his resources, his philosophical reflections, his mathematical genius, he cannot work it out. He cannot find it. He cannot penetrate it. Surely then we can buy it. Surely we can buy it. Surely we can purchase it somewhere. We think of the precious metals that are mined from the earth. Surely such costly metals can be used to purchase wisdom. Apparently not, says Job. Most certainly not, says Job. You cannot buy wisdom, and you cannot buy understanding. Verse 15 tells us, notice, it cannot be gotten for gold. And no matter how wealthy you might be, and there are some people in the world today whose wealth is almost beyond computation, and yet all of this wealth cannot buy wisdom, cannot purchase understanding. Verse 50 tells us it cannot be gotten for gold, for fine gold, precious gold. According to verse 16, it cannot be put onto a set of balancing scales. Wisdom on one side, and gold and silver on the other, to buy it. Oh no. According to verse 18, its price is above rubies, above pearls. We think of the wealth of the rich and the famous. You think of these Russian oligarchs. How much money they spend. How much money they spend on football clubs. But they cannot buy wisdom. And they cannot buy understanding. They cannot purchase it. But all of this cannot purchase this elusive thing called wisdom. Called wisdom. And so the question is asked again in verse number 20. Whence then comes wisdom? Where is understanding? This is a question that has already been asked and posed by Job in verse number 12. Verse number 21 tells us that it is hid from the eyes of all living. It is hid from the eyes of all living. And verses 13 and 14 tell us how wisdom was nowhere to be found in the upper world. And nowhere is it to be found in the lower world, in the depths of the earth. So we cannot find wisdom. We cannot locate it. We cannot purchase it, no matter how wealthy we might be. And then we come to the final section of this great chapter. And here we are directed to the one who alone has wisdom and who has understanding. One who alone knows that place, for he has set it in that place. And in the final section of the chapter, from verse 23 to the end, we are brought face to face with the fact that wisdom and understanding are to be had in God himself. And nowhere else. In verses 23 and 24, we are brought to the one reality. It is the one reality that modern men and women and young people cannot accept. Cannot accept. The truth against which they constantly rebel. It is the reality of God. It is the existence of God. It is God as an explanation of everything. Why we are here, and our destiny as individuals. And in these two verses, the sheer greatness of God is brought to our attention. God understands the way to wisdom. He knows the place of its location. Why is that? Because its secret is lodged in him. It is lodged in him. God is in possession of wisdom, for he is the upholder and the creator of the world, indeed of the universe. Look at verse number 24 and these great words here used by Job. He looks to the ends of the earth. He thinks about God. And he thinks about all that God surveys. His glance as creator, it extends over everything. He sees under the whole heaven. You think of the language here. The great difficulty with you and I is that we see perhaps 5.5 feet, 6 feet above the ground. Our knowledge of things is very limited. What we survey is very restricted. We do not see everything and we cannot see everything. We cannot leave this world in which we live and go outside the world so that we are enabled to see everything as it is. We cannot do that. It is only God that has this breadth of vision because he has made everything and he sees everything. He sees under the whole heaven. And so how can we as creatures possibly have knowledge of everything? It is only God who has knowledge of everything. And then from verse 25 to verse number 27, the greatness of God as creator, as initiator, as controller of the might of nature is highlighted for us. No human can do this. Control the power of the elements, especially weather conditions. You think of this present time. You think of the flooding down in the south of England. It's uncontrollable. Man with all his resources cannot control it. And in verses 25 and 26, we are shown only a few specimens of God's wisdom and God's ordering given to us. He speaks here about the wind. You think of the power of the wind, how destructive it can be. He speaks about water, and we see that in the south of England at the present time and in Wales. He speaks about rain, and we know all about that, and he speaks about thunder. And notice, will you, the verbs that are used here, the verbs that are used of God. Notice, he gave to the wind its weight. He meted out the waters by measure. He controls the waters. He made a decree for the rain, a way for the lightning of thunder. What we have here are samples. Samples of the agencies and forces of creation. But they are not chaotic. They are not as chaotic as they might seem. They are not uncontrolled and uncontrollable. Now, the weathermen and women have a great deal of resources. They have satellites and they have radar and all of their stations reporting the weather conditions. And it would seem at times that the weather is uncontrolled and uncontrollable. No, says Job, these things are weighed, and they are measured, and they are adjusted by the one who has wisdom. And so we come to the last verse, verse number 28. And here God speaks for the first time since the early chapters of Job, and he speaks to all of us. He speaks to all of us. We turn in verse number 28 from reflection on all that God is as the very source of wisdom. And we turn now to action. It is an action that is laid upon us as individuals. Living before this God, how are we to live? In search for the meaning and understanding of all things, where are we to look? Well, we're given the answer here. And the answer is not theoretical. The answer is practical, notice. Behold, the fear of the Lord, that is wisdom. And to depart from evil, that is understanding. One of the great contrasts between the present time in which we live and the past is that people in the past, although they may not have committed themselves to believing in God fully, may not have committed themselves to the gospel, they did believe that there was some great being behind the universe. They had some kind of belief in God, and they had some kind of fear of God, fear of the Lord. In a book entitled The Life of the Cosmos, a scientist called Liam Smolin, who's not a Christian, writes, Since at least the 17th century, the writings of Western philosophers and scientists have rung with the ambition to have a complete knowledge about the world. A complete knowledge about the world. But such knowledge, as we see from this chapter, such knowledge, such understanding, is the sole possession of God himself. This kind of knowledge. But the advice given here by God is not to pursue the secrets of a higher life, not to seek it in mysticism, but rather to seek the Lord, and to fear him, and to walk before him, to have veneration for him, to have the fear of the Lord, the recognition of God, that he's not only the God that made us, but the God that can save us, and the God that can give us meaning and wisdom and understanding. But the Bible does not end in Job chapter 28, speaking about wisdom, because when we go into the New Testament, we find again that Paul speaks about wisdom. And he speaks about wisdom in 1 Corinthians, in chapters 1 and 2. And he writes in 1 Corinthians chapter 1 and verse 19, he says, quoting the book of Isaiah, he says of God, "I will destroy the wisdom of the wise, and will bring to nothing the understanding of the prudent." And he writes in verse number 20 at the end, "Hath not God made foolish the wisdom of this world?" Now it is evident that the wisdom spoken about here is the wisdom of this world. It is a wisdom that leaves God out. It is a wisdom that does not take God into account in thinking about our lives here in this world. And Paul writes in verse number 21, "For after that in the wisdom of God, the world by wisdom knew not God. It pleased God by the foolishness of preaching," really the content of what is preached, "to save them that believe." And so Paul speaks about wisdom, the wisdom of God. But where is this wisdom to be located? How are we to come into contact with it? Well, he tells us we come into contact with wisdom when we come into contact with Jesus Christ. And so we see how very relevant this chapter is in the book of Job in chapter 28. There is a practical side to this. And where is wisdom to be had and understanding? Paul tells us it is not to be found in the philosophies of this world. Not that they should be wholly discounted, but wisdom. Wisdom to live by is to be had in Jesus Christ. It is to be had in the gospel. In his commentary on 1 Corinthians, the New Testament scholar, the late C.K. Barrett, writes, "Here wisdom is not merely the plan. It is the very stuff of salvation. It is the very stuff of salvation." And at the end of that chapter, Christ is presented to us as God's wisdom for us. And so where are we to come into contact with wisdom and understanding? We come into contact with wisdom and understanding when we come into contact with Jesus Christ. When we believe the gospel, which is the very wisdom of God. It is God's way of salvation. Nothing difficult, nothing complicated, nothing sophisticated here. It is the wisdom of God in the cross and in Jesus Christ and in the salvation that he offers to us. Paul, when he writes his letter to the Colossians, reminds us that in Christ and in Christ alone there are hid, he says, all the treasures of wisdom and knowledge. So if you are here today, asking the questions, where shall wisdom be found? Where is the place of understanding? For us, that place is located in Jesus Christ. It is located in Jesus Christ as the wisdom and the power of God, primarily for our salvation. And so Paul, and so confronted by the great questions of life, where indeed shall wisdom be found? Not by mining into the earth. Not by going to the depths of the sea, but looking to the place where it is located in Jesus Christ and in the good news of the gospel, and reaching out and grasping this wisdom and grasping this understanding and grasping this salvation in Jesus Christ and in Him alone.